This podcast is made possible by Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. You don't need to be a bioengineer to help change the shape of humanity. Become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
It's a new year, Eric. There's going to be some things that will happen this year, no doubt. And I'm wondering what ETFs we should share with our listeners to help them get ahead in the year ahead.
Yeah, this has become an annual tradition. We at Bloomberg Intelligence are tasked with writing outlooks, just like all of our stock and bond colleagues. But we also, in addition to that, do a listicle. People like listicles, Joel.
They do.
You know this.
Numbers. Years,
numbers,
they
yes.
tend to go well together.
So we thought we would do, this is about 5 years ago. I think we started in, 18 or 19? We did 19 ETFs for 2019. We did 20 ETFs for 2020. And today, we're going to unveil 24 ETFs for 2024. See how that works?
24
We go by the year. Yeah.
Do we actually have 24?
So in our big note, we have 24.
Yeah.
Because we have Rebecca and Henry contributing from Europe and Asia. But today, we're just going to give you the U.S. version. So it's 15 of the 24
you'll hear today. So 24 minus 9 for the year ahead. So 15 ETFs to know about.
But the U.S. ones, which I think our audience is probably more interested in anyway. So, plus, some of these are going to cause a little debate, and we just won't have time to get through 24.
So joining us, James Seifert and Athanasios Serafagas, both ETF analysts with Bloomberg Intelligence. This time on Trillions, ETFs for the year ahead. Okay, Eric, you're going to kick it off. You have a disclaimer, and then you're going to give us the first ETF to watch.
Yeah, so just real quick, you know, these are not our picks for what will go up or down. We don't know.
We don't make calls.
We don't make calls. We're not allowed to. And frankly, I think most people on the team admit none of us know the future. In fact, nobody knows the future, if we're going to be really honest. But these are ETFs that catch our attention, that we're thinking about, that have tapped into some trend or some rarity that just, you know, gets us as if we're ETF scientists. This is something we obsess over a little bit.
ETFs to watch. That's what
That's right, to
it.
Watch.
Yeah.
Okay, my first one is the Pacer U.S. Small Cap Cash Cows 100 ETF.
What's that ticker?
CAF.
Ooh.
So this is the baby brother of Cows, which is the large cap cash cow ETF. This ETF made what we do is called an outliers list we do every month, which shows ETFs that took in way more that month in flows than their average, their 12-month average. So if it's more than two standard deviations above it, we note it because, hey, this is an ETF.
Something's happening.
CAF has made the list three times this year.
Huh.
It is really breaking out. If you look at the flow chart, it looks a lot like ARK back in 2020 when it was just coming to be. It's probably the best kind of flow chart you can have. It shows total organic growth, total grassroots interest, a pure phenomenon, and I would call Pacer indie. So I call this the indie feel-good hit of the year. And what this does is it looks for cash flow yield in small caps. Now, as you know, large caps crushed this past year. Nobody cares about small caps or anything else other than like the Super 7. So this ETF basically doubled the performance of the Russell 2000, which is this benchmark for small caps. So in other words, it picked small caps from within this universe and doubled it.
Mm.
That is so hard to do. If an active manager did it, we'd be like praising them all day. Not only that, this beat the S&P.
Mm.
So to think about it, a small cap ETF that's picking certain stocks beat the S&P. Shocker, right? That's why the flows are coming in. People are like, holy moly, this thing has something special going on. Part of it is in small caps, there's a lot of junk. But looking at cash flow yield is actually a pretty brilliant way to pick out the better quality type of small cap. So it's something got a quality tilt. But listen to these flow numbers, by the way. It's taken in cash flows for 44 months straight. It's taken in flows every week this year but one. And it's on a 100-day inflow streak. These are Vanguard numbers. Only Vanguard and maybe Schwab can lay numbers down like this. And if you look at the holders, it's a lot of the big wirehouses, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo. It's so hard to get into those places. So this ETF defied the odds. Can it keep it going? You know, if small caps come back, like some analysts are saying, because large caps had their year, this thing could have a future. It could keep actually going. So, and it could pass CALS, which is its big brother, which is rare.
I think that's a great pick. I love what you said. You know, small caps didn't have a great year. To sort of beat not having like some of that, large cap exposure, one is really like a pretty incredible feat.
James, you got the mic. What's your number two?
Yeah, so mine is going to be Bitto, the ProShares Bitcoin Futures Strategy ETF. I talk about Bitcoin every year. I feel like the last 2 years I had GBTC on there. But it's finally here. We're probably going to get a spot Bitcoin ETF in early January, as Eric and I predicted a few months back. But the question, like, what's going to happen to Bitto? This thing is well over $1 billion. It's a couple billion dollars in assets. It's done very well as Bitcoin has risen. But there's some concerns. Like, if most people if they want exposure to Bitcoin, they're going to much prefer a spot allocation, something like GBTC or these other ETFs that are going to come to market. So the question is, what's going to happen to Bitto? I think eventually it will go to the wayside, but likely, at least initially, it's going to be stick around. But the problem is Bitto, since the beginning of the year, has underperformed spot by over 14% because of the roll cost. So essentially, when you have a futures ETF and you have to maintain exposure to the underlying asset, in this case Bitcoin, it's basically selling a futures contract for 1 month and buying the next month. And if that next month is more expensive, you're losing money every time. And as Bitcoin goes on a bull run like it has the last couple months, that cost goes up for every month, because basically the curve goes into contango, without getting too into the weeds. But this means that Bitto, like, for a long-term allocation, isn't that great of a strategy, essentially. Not great of a tool, because basically that 14% is your cost for owning this ETF as compared to owning the underlying asset. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think this thing will be used heavily by the market makers, at least initially, when we get those spot ETFs, because they can use them to hedge positions while they're creating markets in other areas. But it will be fascinating to see, like, what happens with the flows. Is money going to pour out of Bitto and into these spot products? Who knows? But it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and it's ironic that Bitto is getting so much of the attention in the sort of buy the rumor action ahead of the spot approvals. But when spot gets approved, Bitto is going to get ignored, not totally ignored, but people are going to migrate. Yeah. Because any ETF that uses futures, and if there's one that does it physical, people like it physical.
So if that's $1 billion and we're on here next year, where do you guys think that's at?
I think Bitcoin might, after this big run up, maybe let's call Bitcoin flat, okay? I would say it loses 30% of its assets, 700 million, but then 2 years we're at 500 million. I think it's down to under 100 million in five years.
So it was
years,
a
though.
Great strategy before the spot vehicle finally got approved.
Yeah, ProShares made a nice little coin on this thing, and it served the purpose in the market, but advisors, if you put futures in an ETF, they're not going to buy it. The gold futures ETF that used to exist closed. Mm. So, that tells you all you need to know. Everybody wants it physical.
Athanasios, what's your third?
So this one is MDIV, which is the First Trust Multi-Asset Income ETF. The reason I picked this one is, like, income was a really hot trade this year, right? So, like, JEPI, everyone's just looking at, well, which ETFs pay out the most income, the highest yield? So if we diversify stocks, we diversify bonds, why not diversify your income sources? And this is why I like it, because it holds all different income sources. It holds your high yield bonds, REITs, preferreds, dividend stocks, MLPs. So the risk with sometimes just being so attached to one is obviously you're depending on that one income source. So I like this approach of diversifying it. It has a 6% yield. JEPI's like 8.6. And it's at the same place where JEPI is this year. And JEPI was probably like the hottest trade this year. It's a little bit expensive. It's a First Trust product. Them being cheap is not really their MO, but it's about 65 basis points. Still pretty small ETF, but I like the notion of diversifying your different sources of income.
That one is a little bit more boring than the the first two.
What was the ticker?
MDIV.
All right, Eric, you're fourth.
I don't know, man.
You don't like that one? Let's see what your next round is. Like, bring some
fireworks. I'll be right back. I got to go to the espresso machine.
Bring some
fireworks. Didn't you lead with cash, companies that have cash, a lot of cash on hand?
All right, you know what? I was going to save this one for later. I got to bring this now, okay? I'm going to go with the Global X MSCI Argentina ETF.
Ooh, bring in some heat.
Yeah. So they just selected this guy who runs around with a chainsaw, and he calls himself an anarcho-capitalist. And it's fascinating. Every time one of these emerging market countries goes from like socialism and then swings so far the other way to like capitalism, the ETFs love it. This thing is up 22% in a month since this guy got elected. The volume's up a lot. And emerging markets as a whole is flat. So clearly, people like this. Now, I always find it fascinating. Can he pull it off? So there's this excitement that, oh, it's a more business-friendly leader.
By the way, his name is Javier Milei.
Yes. And he's a character. And he's gotten a lot of attention. But it's all words right now. Can he
And he was elected by saying some stuff and is immediately like pivoted in office.
This is the thing. What he's saying, you know, I get it. It's a great message, I guess. It could be a good message if you live there. But words to action are different. But we'll see if this works. All I know is that when there's any hint of a pro-business leader getting elected in one of these single country emerging market ETFs, the ETF goes wild for a while. And we'll see if this, you know, India, it happened with Moti back when he was there, Brazil. And so here we're now in Argentina. So I like to watch these because I always call single country ETFs are sort of like the sports book of geopolitics.
Mm. When you see, I love that. That sounds fun.
You know, people use them to like bet on these
Athanasius,
situations.
Are you taking notes on this? So you bring the
So I'm watching. I'll be watching this next year. Can it maintain this sort of excitement or will reality set in and it go down?
What was the ticker for this?
ARGT.
So easy to remember.
Invesco QQQ is a proud sponsor of this podcast. Want to rethink what's possible? How about being an investor, not just in your future, but the future? Well, it all starts with Invesco QQQ. For more than 25 years, this single ETF has given investors a direct line to the NASDAQ 100. That's 100 leading innovators behind advances in personal tech, science, and robotics, just to name a few. And you can access it all with Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc. This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. What do all the greatest innovations have in common? Agents, people who participate in progress by supporting cutting-edge ideas. Invesco QQQ is a fund that allows you access to innovators of the NASDAQ 100 all in one fund. So you don't have to be an inventor to help create what's next to come. Anyone can become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
All right, James, we're starting round two. Go.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with something that is going to upset Eric a little bit here. I actually did this one a few years back, but I have to bring it back. I'm going to do the Xtrackers S&P 500 ESG ETF, SNPE. So this whole thing, the strategy is basically don't rock the boat. So its overall goals are to basically give you a very similar risk return profile to the S&P 500, but also avoid companies that are doing basically things that are against ESG practices. So basically what it does is it decides what ESG factors are most critical to different sectors and then kicks out the worst performers in each sector by whatever those metrics are. So it's going to be different metrics for oil and gas companies versus tech companies, right? So right now it has 322 stocks. The reason I'm covering is because one, I've believed for a long time that I'm not a huge fan of these ESG ETFs that are picking bottom up based on ESG fundamental criteria. I think you miss out on a lot of home runs if you do it that way. If you're just picking solely because of some ESG metrics, it makes sense to use ESG as an overall investment decision in my view. But I'm just not a fan of the bottoms up picking solely based on ESG characteristics. And what has this led to? So if you look at the index, it's beating the S&P 500 by over 35% since the index was created and backtested in 2005, backtested through 2005. And I know what Eric is going to say and what anyone's saying. Well, tell me how it's done since it launched. So since it launched in 2019, it's beating SPY by 11%. It charges a 10 basis point fee. It's a great story for advisors. It's not huge tracking error to the underlying asset, which a lot of advisors don't want to talk about. And that 10% fee is pretty cheap. So like I said, I'm not a huge fan of these ESG ETFs that exclude high returners. A lot of them suffered heavily because they didn't have exposure to oil and gas as they went on a run the last couple of years. I'm picking S&PE just because it's been performing exceptionally well, and it's one of the rare ESG cases that's doing well this year. It's almost a $1 billion fund.
Yeah, no, you're right. The performance has been good, and I have to give that up. And it's a good ETF. You know, the problem is if you're going in and you want, quote, ESG, you look at the holdings here, you've got Amazon, potentially like worker issues. You've got Tesla, that's got a whole host of issues. You've got Chevron, all in the top 20. So, I mean, what are we really doing here, James? Why not just buy the stupid S&P 500? Like, what it... What are because we really doing here? How is this changing the world?
It's not changing the world. I don't agree with any of those ETFs that are bottoms up ESG.
In other words, you say buy this because it's an outperforming potential. You could care less
and
about
it's no, because it's kicking out the absolute worst performers from each sector. So like there are firms in the sectors of communications or technology or consumer discretionary that have way worse ESG scores than the ones you named.
So it's like a filtering mechanism that's actually attempting to like isolate
Pepsi and Coca-Cola are in the 20 ones. Top 25. McDonald's. Walt
Don't
Disney.
Hate him too much. This is he's just giving you things to watch.
I know.
All right. Yeah, this Listen, is an actual
I'm trying
core,
to get something going here, Joel.
Substitution.
After MDiv, we got to get some action here.
Well, on that note, Athanasios, we're on number six.
I'm terrified
how,
now.
How are you
going to
follow MDiv up?
Terrified. okay. I like this ticker. It's a new ETF. It's DESK. Right, so it's the VanEck Office.
Stronger start.
Okay, it's coming off better on this one. It's the VanEck Office and Commercial REIT ETF, right? It's a little bit of a contrarian play because it's, you know, playing on commercial real estate. But it's a very unique ETF. There's really nothing else like it out there.
How so?
Because it's focusing mostly just on the commercial REITs and office REITs. You know, you can get this exposure in some of the bigger ETFs, but it won't be as pure as this one. And while the ETF is new, if you look at the index of it, it's below where it was even during COVID. And if you remember, like offices were like done during COVID. So it's like, how is this still at that level? I think if with a change in rates maybe next year, I think it's something to watch. It's very unique. It's small. There's really no other ETF like it. So I like this one as a contrarian play for next year, especially with a push with firms going back to the office more, right? We're seeing it everywhere. I think this one could be something to watch for next year.
I like that. That's a little bit of a sleeper.
Yeah. I mean, it's very small. It just came out as 1 million. So, but yeah, this could be a proxy for what you're talking about.
Yeah. We always sort of debate on the team, like get it back to the office or whatnot. And I think you're right. That's a good proxy.
Fernando is the top holding, and a lot of people have used that as a proxy for...
Yeah. Okay, beginning of round three, Eric.
Hey, wait. I want to add something real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you talked about Vernado. I also agree. Like, I love this pick from Ethan because commercial real estate has been something that everyone's talking about. I mean, your sister or sibling podcast at Oddlots talks about this constantly. So if people are looking for an ETF to play this looks like a good way to do it. And you mentioned Vernado. Fun fact, we're sitting in a Vernado-owned building, technically speaking. Mm. So nice, they're nice, definitely commercial real estate.
Well, yeah, you're remote.
You're in Jersey in your house. or I don't know, maybe Vernado built your house. By the way, the second company is called Kilroy. Can anybody name the 80s song that has the lyric Kilroy?
Oh, man.
Probably Magnus is my only hope.
Yeah, our producer.
Magnus.
From the booth.
Kilroy. What song? Dix, Mr. Roboto.
Oh.
See?
Very good.
Anyway.
All right, round three, Eric.
I love that song when I was a kid. Okay, round three.
Hold on. Round three, Eric, you got the seventh ETF to watch.
Yep, and I think I'll do my most boring one just because those last two were really good. Okay, FBND. This is the Fidelity.
You like how he's trying to sneak that in?
Okay. You can't tell me this is more exciting than
Listen, MDiv. I'm like, Fidelity Bond, is that?
He's going to try and sneak it past us.
Listen,
okay, let's hear it.
You're one step from
VOO. I'm like one of those old legacy bands that does shows still. You do a couple hits early, your new stuff in the middle, and you close with the headliners, okay? So this is the new stuff boring, okay?
Fair.
All right, FBND has $6.5 billion. This is a Fidelity Bond ETF. This has also made the outliers list multiple months. And I'm looking at this, and it's fascinating. This is Fidelity at 36 basis points for an active bond, and it outperforms the ag. So it's doing its job. It's cheap. It's under the 40 basis point mark. And I think this is representative to me of what the company to watch next year, which is Fidelity. Fidelity has done a couple things. They've converted some ETFs, mutual funds into ETFs. They are gearing up, I think, for what is going to be a massive year. I think they've finally sold upper management, that ETFs are the future. And the guy working inside there, I think he's going to be able to do some big moves. I see Fidelity cracking the top 10 in terms of issuer size. And I see them doing all kinds of things, conversions. They filed for an ETF share class of their mutual funds. So if they get all this going, look out, you know, because Fidelity is a behemoth. So one of our big themes in the outlook is the many roads to ETF. So Fidelity is a firm that's going to take every road. Mm-hmm. It'll be busy on each road, and each road will have certain reasons. You don't use conversions all the time or share classes, but Fidelity is going to be very specific in how it approaches ETFs. But essentially, it's going to slowly start to move all of its existing clients over from the mutual fund format to the ETF format. And FBND at $6.5 billion is crazy because remember Bond, the PIMCO Bill mm-hmm. Gross Fund? That was the biggest bond ETF, biggest active bond ETF for a long time. This is double that size. Hmm. So that's how fast they, you know, we have a phrase, they grow up so fast. This is a great example of that.
Yeah. I'm curious when they discover how they'll do active ETFs. Fidelity obviously being famous for its active management history.
That's the thing. Again, if you can be active, have a good name, and be below 40 bips, that's a good place to be. It's when, if this came over at 90, I would not be as optimistic. Yeah. But it's cheap. It's made the decision to do that. And we had our ETFs in depth event in December. And Brian Lake of JP Morgan, I asked them what they're most excited about. And he said active fixed income is probably the biggest white space still. Hmm. He said there's just, because that's a space where mutual funds have way more market share versus ETFs than in the equity side. So there's early, early innings in the active bond area.
That was less boring than I thought. James, how are you going to follow that with your eighth?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with something that's definitely more exciting than Fidelity Bond Fund. But I do agree with Eric's pick. Like the actively managed fixed income ETF space is going to be very interesting just overall, because I think that's the way you're going to suck assets for the mutual fund
side.
Okay,
we'll come back to it.
That said,
let's hear it.
My pick is the Roundhill Cannabis ETF with ticker WEED, W-E-E-D. One, I love the ticker. You can't not love, the ticker is just so perfect for what it's doing. This is relatively new, right? We've had marijuana / cannabis ETFs for quite a while now. But for the most part, they weren't offering the purest form of exposure until basically MJUS from AdvisorShares came out with this idea, basically offering exposure to what is known as multi-state operators. They're marijuana companies that operate across state lines. So they're in this legal gray zone, basically, that doesn't allow an ETF to invest in them. And what AdvisorShares pioneered was using swaps with banks to get those exposures, because technically you're not holding underlying assets. It's look, it's just a gray area. But what WEED does is it takes it a step further. Those other ETFs still hold a bunch of other stocks that weren't strictly MSOs. They were investing in Canadian firms and other international firms. There's a lot of different ways to do this. But WEED is just holding strictly MSOs, five stocks, that's it. So it's a super concentrated portfolio. And look, these things have done horribly over the last couple of years. It's continually making lower and lower highs and then sinking again. So I know Eric likes this too, to look at ETFs that have been just like pushed down into the bunker here and see what's going to happen.
That was some
but
nice
this is obviously
play.
Would be a play in this would obviously be a play on like some sort of federal legalization or further states legalizing marijuana going forward. This is going to be a key way to do that, and it's super concentrated portfolio. And the way it gets around it is we've talked about the single stock ETFs on here. They kind of made this loophole by using those swaps and diversifying who the swap counterparties are to meet the diversification requirements. But essentially, all you need to know is that this is really on the cutting edge of like what ETFs can do, and they're offering super concentrated exposure to those multi-state operating marijuana firms.
You have snuck in like so much little like jargon in there, like concentrates and highs and
yeah. It's,
you weren't even trying, and yet you like totally, you know, did the cannabis industry a solid there.
Can I ask you, how many times a week do you smell marijuana
in New York City? All the time now,
like once a day.
Yeah. But I mean, like.
I'm fine with it. But I'm telling you, 5-6 years ago, it was once a week. Now it's every day. Whatever. I smell it more than cigarettes.
Yeah, this is the future. Okay, Athanasios, how are you going to follow that?
RSPT.
This is number 9, last one for round 3.
RSPT, which is equal weight S&P 500 tech. And this is the Mag 7, right? All this year. But remember like the 400 or so other companies? Like they're still out there, right? They're still doing stuff. I think equal weight could have a year next year. It's just a way to detox off the Mag 7. You don't want to fully give off the exposure, but I think this year showed that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's a problem when a few stocks just lead everything else. I think there could be a little bit of a reversal. So I like equal weight. I'm not.
So you want to diversify the rest of
and still stay in tech. Yeah. So you're not fully getting off of it. You're just sort of, you know, rejiggering it.
RSPT is like the methadone of the Qs.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
I didn't know how far you wanted to be, or said detox, but.
No, I get it. You're still getting something, so you're not completely going cold turkey. I get it.
We had a great 50% the Qs. You know, I know. Whoever said that this year is lying to you. No one had that on their agenda for this year. So we've had a good, I think, just, you know, appreciate it. And I think equal ways.
Round 3 unexpectedly became a recreational drug reference galore. Let's see what round 4 does. Eric, kick us off.
All right. I will stick with the Qs because this one's related, which this one is called JEPQ. So this is the little brother of JEPI. And JEPI.
Remind us what JEPI was?
Yeah. JEPI is the equity premium income fund that JP Morgan put out that became the biggest active ETF hit ever. Bigger than ARK, bigger than PIMCO. It's got $30 billion, and it's just breaking all the records. It's a covered call strategy, so it invests in the S&P, although it does some fundamental picking. But it's largely a low-vol version of the S&P, and then it writes call options a little bit out of the money. So if you give up your upside, because if the S&P goes up a lot, you have to, those options will get called, and you won't get that money. But you get premium from selling the options, so it has a big yield. And the yield can act as a buffer on the downside. So we sometimes call this boomer candy. Mm. Boomers love the protection aspect of some of this because they want to be involved in the markets. They're willing to give up a lot of upside. So JEPI has done a great job of bringing that. But JEPQ to me is like JEPI but with a little more juice. So like it's the Qs and it's covered call. So for example, year to date, this thing returned 35%. You still got 10, 11% yield. And the Sharpe ratio was 2.5, which is pretty high. If you compare that to JEPI, in terms of those numbers, JEPI was only up 9%, 9% yield, and the Sharpe ratio was 0.5. So JEPQ has kind of come along as the little brother and beat JEPI on every single metric. And so it's just catching up in flows too. Now, it'll be interesting because if you're like Ethan and you think that the Qs might be a little out of gas, that yield gives you a little buffer. So JEPQ, I think, also acts as a methadone-ish way to play the Qs.
I think that's a good pick. I think this year that was a tough trade, but I think looking at it for next year, it could make sense.
The way you're talking, it's like you we haven't had reviews yet. Come on, man. Hit me. I'm ready.
Turn it up.
Yeah. Come on, man. Come at me.
I think it's a good pick.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Nothing?
James, let's hear your number 11.
So this was, this wasn't going to be the one I was going to go with, so I'm going out of order here, but it's directly in line. I guess great minds think alike, right? I agree with everything that Ethan and Eric said, but I think I like a different ETF to look at going forward. So one is just, it's the Arrow Reverse Cap Weighted ETF. So it's similar. The way the one that gets the most play is more in line with Athens RSPT, but just regular RSP. It's taken in a lot of money earlier this year, and flows are pouring in again late this year. And basically, all that one does is it equal weights the S&P 500. Whereas YPS, the one I'm picking, actually reverse cap weights it. So basically, the smallest ones in the S&P 500 get the highest weight in YSP. And that's because of all the stuff that they all both just talked about with the Magnificent 7, Super 7, whatever you want to talk about it. They're like making up 75% of the returns so far in 2023. But I like YSP to play it, even though it's only a $10 million fund. It's getting no interest from anyone, but everyone's pouring into RSP instead. But in my view, I just think it's a more efficient way to kind of make this play. Rather than selling out of your S&P 500 exposure, you could only sell a small chunk and then buy this thing as a complement to kind of get that sort of similar equal weighted type exposure. You don't need to sell the whole thing and move into another product. So I just think it's efficient from that way. And if you really are betting on the smaller cap stocks catching up to the large cap stocks or outperforming the larger names in the index or ETF in this case, every time that there's been a run where equal weight outperforms the regular market cap weighted ETFs in this space, YSP has outperformed the equal weighted version. So it's basically like a leveraged version of RSP. I mean, obviously past performance is not indicative of future return, but by reverse cap weighting, it ends up being a more leveraged play on equal cap weighting. And I think you can use this to make a more efficient exposure if you want to dial down your Magnificent 7 or Super 7 exposure.
Athanasios,
but no one seems to care. No one's buying this thing.
Athanasios, would you trade your pick for that pick?
I'd still stick with mine.
Oh, zing.
It's a good pick, but I still like having being still in tech.
Okay, so
I'm not saying to get out of tech. You would just take like a chunk of your S&P 500 exposure and put it in this to kind of lower your exposure to the Magnificent 7. That's all it would do. I would never say replace your S&P 500 with this thing, but I think it's a good complement to kind of get the same thing without having to sell anything.
Yeah, fair.
It's a whole position.
Just a little bit of methadone.
He's still not sold. Yeah.
All right, this is like the most toxic trade ever, I think. That you want to love it, it never works, it's value. Right, every year it's like, this is it. Like, I've changed, and I've talked to Chris Kane. He's our quant strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence. And there's a lot of stuff that points to value for next year. And if you're going to do it, you're going to have to go full in. So QVAL, it's the Alpha Architect U.S. Quantitative Value ETF. And it's very concentrated. It's got the purest exposure to value. So if you're going to do it, do with QVAL. I think it can have a pretty interesting year next year. I know we've called value in the past before. You sometimes get these little bouts of outperformance, but I think, could this year be different? I don't know, but I think QVAL is something to watch for next year.
Yeah, this ETF is in the top five of our factor intensity score for value because it's like hot sauce value. When value comes back, this thing should be at the top of the performers. And I just think that makes sense, because you got a lot of value already in S&P 500 or your total market. This just gives you a little tilt with only a little dose. So you'll need a little bit of this puppy to give you some real exposure to value. And there's a junk screen in it. So it's not that hardcore where it buys total junk.
Yeah, I mean, value, I feel like every year I've been hearing the value is going to come back and it has spurts where it comes back. And then, as Eric likes to say, the Qs and high tech, high cap growth just comes and runs it over. So, we'll see what happens. But it's certainly been hard to stick with value for a long-term play, but it's a good pick.
You know, on last year I did iVal. iVal's QVAL, but worse, because it's international value. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to go crazy, iVal, get the PE on iVal. Anybody want to guess?
It's like 7?
Lower. Just for context, the PE on the S&P 500 is 25-ish, 26. So what do you think iVal's price to earnings average is?
5?
6.
6. Okay.
I mean, that is like,
yeah.
At some
wow.
point, right?
That is like,
does that have
I know.
Does that have a
pulse? Did you see this chart in the MSCI world? Apple now has a bigger weighting than the UK.
Yeah.
Bigger than France.
Yeah.
I mean, the Super 7 make up more than like the rest of the world combined, pretty much.
By Super 7, you mean the Magnificent
7? Magnificent 7. I like Super 7 because of alliteration.
Maybe, yeah.
And Magnificent 7's a movie.
Maybe it's worthwhile to say what the Magnificent 7 is. Maybe it's worthwhile to say what the Magnificent 7 is. So just for anyone who doesn't know,
it's a Western with Lee
Apple,
Marvin.
Microsoft.
Okay, wait. Let's actually say it. Okay, James, Magnificent 7.
Since we've said it like 10.
Yeah.
Listen, by the way, let's say they crash and burn next year. and there's one other stock we can throw in. We can call them the Hateful Eight.
James, let's name the Magnificent Seven just so we have it on tape. Go for it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet, aka Google, Amazon, Nvidia, Tesla, and Meta, aka Facebook, the artist formerly known as. So those are the seven names like that we keep talking about as though everyone knows, but just to make sure.
Yeah, we kept adding A's to Fang, and then we were like, wait, we just needed something new.
It's, Nvidia and just Nvidia crashed the party in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Tesla, too.
Yeah.
Support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. 25 years ago, Invesco QQQ rethought the investing landscape by providing access to the Nasdaq's 100 most innovative companies all in one ETF. What's ahead for the next 25 years? Could it be flying cars, neural implants, electric planes? No one knows for sure, but one thing's for certain. You can gain access to that progress with Invesco QQQ ETF. Let's rethink possibility. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc. This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. What do all the greatest innovations have in common? Agents. People who participate in progress by supporting cutting-edge ideas. Invesco QQQ is a fund that allows you access to innovators of the NASDAQ 100 all in one fund. So you don't have to be an inventor to help create what's next to come. Anyone can become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Final round, Eric, you're going to kick us off with number 13.
Okay. Number 13, my last pick is Tua, which it's not the quarterback for the Dolphins, although I like him a lot too. It's the Simplify Short-Term Treasury Futures Strategy ETF. I picked this for a few reasons. One, you know, the Fed has seemingly said we're, you know, not mission accomplished quite, but they're clearly feeling good. So if they were to start lowering rates next year, clearly you'd want to be long treasuries. So this one is like a leveraged... It's actively managed, uses treasury futures, and it's got some leverage in it. So if rates fall, this will pop a little bit. And futures are a pain to use. A lot of institutions do this trade. This is a trade that was popular at PIMCO for a while. So I like this for a few reasons. One, next year, again, if you think rates are going to fall, this should be in a good position. Number two, it does a lot of legwork for you. It does something that's a pain in the butt. Three, you only need a little. Again, just a little bit to get you where you want to go in terms of playing the rate fall. And then the other reason is this is Simplify is a fascinating company to me. They came along and they've got a lot of ex-hedge fund people there. They're the closest thing to an actual real hedge fund in the ETF world. And this is proven by the fact that they have gotten multiple institutional investors to buy into their funds. Like Tua is owned by the Michigan retirees, and then they've gotten General Electric's pension. I can't, as a guy who wrote a book about institutional usage of ETFs, it is so hard to get an institution to buy into an ETF that isn't just like one of the liquid ones they use quickly for some like, you know, short-term usage. But for them to invest in your fund, it's rare. They like to be exclusive. They like to go with the best brains. The ETFs to them are like the public pool that all the plebs use. They're like, I'm better than that. So the fact that institutions are going in here is I think tells you how serious people take Simplify and the people who work there. And I think it's fascinating because these ETFs, Tua is 15 basis points. A hedge fund would charge you 2.20 for this potentially, or at least a lot more. So we're talking hedge fund style management for Vanguardian fees with people who are from the hedge fund world. We're finally seeing that kind of experiment in the alternative space, and I'm here for it.
So what's in the portfolio?
Treasury futures. So it's actively trading treasury futures.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say that I love this pick because I feel like for years, us and pretty much everyone else is like, this might be the year that like alternative ETFs take up like more space. They compete more with hedge funds. Everyone thinks like the alternative ETF space should be larger. It just isn't. There's been some like good hits. Managed future strategies in 2022 did very well. Some other things like that. But for the most part, there just isn't a massive demand, but it's growing heavily now. And a lot of that is being led by Simplify here. So I love this pick.
Like that. All right. James, what's your last pick going to be?
Yeah, so I'm kind of breaking the rules here, but I think it's for very good reason.
I'll be the judge of that.
I'm picking a mutual fund ticker. SWVXX, which is a mutual fund and not an ETF, so I apologize in advance, but it's a Schwab money market fund. This thing is yielding 5.26%, and I'm probably putting people to sleep right now hearing this, but when I throw these other numbers out there, it'll be interesting to see if people realize this. This thing charges 34 basis points, which, again, not super expensive, but also definitely not cheap. Like, I don't think a lot of people realize that these money market funds make a lot of money for these companies, even though they were basically money losers as people were putting money into these things when rates were zero or basically negative. That said, this thing has taken in, at the end of 2022, it had $161 billion. Again, not nothing, very good. It now has $258 billion. That thing has taken in $97 billion in 1 year. If we had an ETF that did that, it would have been on the front pages of everything. So this, I think, is the most successful fund in the U.S. in 2023, as far as I could tell. Money market funds as a whole are likely to hit $1 trillion in inflows this year. ETFs have never done that. So I feel like we just need to kind of point out what's happening here. And part of the reason SWVXX is at the top of this is for like going back into some wonky things. We always talk about commissions and fees and everything's free commission now, but that's not the case anymore. So Schwab bought TD Ameritrade. So anyone who's on Schwab or TD Ameritrade, if you want to buy a money market fund, there's a commission to do it. It costs like, it's not cheap. But what they've done is they said, you can buy our ETFs with no commission and we'll put you in them. So people, it looks like anyone with a TD Ameritrade or Schwab account is looking for somewhere to put this. This is the one they're defaulting to. And this thing, again, it's going to take in over $100 billion in a year. So yes, it sounds sleepy, but like, it's just mind boggling.
That is an insane amount of money for one fund. Insane. Yeah. I mean, the ETF that's going to take in the most money this year is VOO at about $40 billion. And ETFs are on fire, and that's 100.
Yeah.
It's whacked.
Eric's going to have some other comments in your review about bringing a mutual fund to an ETF party, but you know we'll keep it at that. All right. Number 15, Athanasios.
That also makes MDiv look like Don't Steve disappoint. McQueen, man, like a money market fund.
Yeah, true.
You know, but it's still a good pick. Okay, last one. I always like
Steve
to...
Steve McQueen.
That's Mr. Cool, right?
Are
your listeners going to get that reference or not?
We're going to go with it. You're just doing it.
I like the reference, but I mean, that's going way back.
Yeah.
All right, give us the car chasing and bullet. Like to come on, bring it home.
Pick one that's like synonymous with closures. Last year I used K-pop, which was like closing, you know, thematics were getting a little out of hand. This one's going to be crypto. I think ETH, AF, which is the Bitwise Ethereum Futures ETF, this has got to go. I think like it's 85 basis points. It's got a million. It offers nothing different than the other ones. I think it'll go because eventually if Ethereum spot is approved, it's because you have a better product. But I think crypto's gotten a little chummy, and one of them's got it. I can see this closing at some point this year. So I think that's one to watch. It might not be that one, but I think one of the Ethereum futures ones are going to close.
Yeah, and there's a couple that do Bitcoin plus Ethereum futures. I'd say half the category is probably going to close. I mean, even the ProShares one is only $10 million. Bitwise is less than that. Look, I think what we learned from the Ether futures ETFs launching is that, you know, the mania is over. People aren't going to buy any single coin you put out there. Also, Ether, it's Ether and futures. But I don't think this necessarily takes away from a spot Bitcoin ETF. I think that should be a legitimate hit. But this definitely was underwhelming by anybody's standards. Really, these launched and like almost nobody cared.
We cared because we were covering the launch, but nobody really cared about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
That said, I agree. I love this pick because I honestly would have picked one of these if Ethan hadn't already called dibs on it, because Eric and I mean, we haven't put official odds out there, but I think it's pretty likely that we see a spot Ethereum ETF in 2024. We have a couple deadlines coming up on May 23rd and 24th for ARK and VanEck, bunch of other filers. I think it's likely that we get a spot Ethereum ETF. And if we do get that, Bitwise is probably going to be in that race and launching one of these things. And I can't see them keeping the Ethereum futures ETF open, particularly if they don't manage to garner any assets. So I'm with you. I think this is a really good pick for a potential closure next year. And I think multiple, like both of them have said, multiple Ethereum futures ETFs or crypto futures ETFs are likely to close too.
All right. That rounds out 15 ETFs for 2024. Athanasios, James, thanks for doing
like
math.
The ring of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for 15 for 24. Good math with us.
Yeah,
there's
us.
Nine more on the Bloomberg terminal that you can find in the team.
Yeah, if that piqued your interest.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Have a great year, everybody.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter. I'm at Joel Weppershow. He's at Eric Balchunas. This episode of Trillions was produced by Magnus Hendrickson. Bye.
How does Invesco QQQ rethink possibility? By rethinking access to innovation and the NASDAQ 100. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.